Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of DD Geopolitics. I am your host, Sarah. Hopefully, we will have our guest co-host with us today. Maze will be joining us some point in the episode. Chris is in Burkina Faso still. You guys probably seen some of the clips, but they don't have any reliable internet for obvious reasons. So he will probably be back with us on Sunday. But it's so you're stuck with me at least for a little while. Anyway, I hope you are all doing well. And good news, I did get my immersion blender, and as soon as this stream is over, I will be making soup with it. And also, I'm about two-thirds of the way done through Dan's book, which if some of you might have seen our episode with Dan where we discussed it. And this is a really, really good book, and it's really short and really dense. So, and even I'm learning a lot from it, and a lot about the chemical attacks and kind of what led up to the overthrow of Assad. So, it's Syria: Anatomy of Regime Change by Dan Kovalik, one of our frequent guests here on the show. A lot is happening. There's news coming in, like even as I was sitting waiting for the stream. So I guess we'll get started, and as breaking news happens, we'll update throughout. But we are getting an SMO San Francisco. So we have SMO Portland, Chicago, and soon San Francisco. So we're looking forward to that, when we'll obviously be reporting on it. So Trump is in some sort of tiff with Spain. I guess this is because Spain doesn't give enough of their GDP to NATO.
I'm very unhappy with Spain. They're the only country that didn't raise up their number to 5%. Every other country in NATO raised up to 5%. And Spain is doing very well off our backs. So I think what they did is not nice. I think it's very disrespectful to NATO. In fact, I was thinking about giving them trade punishment through tariffs because of what they did. And I may do that. I think unbelievably disrespectful. Spain, the only one out of all the countries in NATO, the only one that said that is Spain. And I think that's, I think they should be punished for that. Yes.
So Spain should be punished for not participating in the privatization of the Ukrainian war and feeding the United States military-industrial complex. Spain has also been quite outspoken about their opposition to the genocide in Gaza. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with, but I mean, I'm just kind of this whole like demanding an uptick in GDP spending toward NATO is just bizarre, especially for a far Western European country like Spain. Just really interesting. And it's interesting that all of the countries that we know that have been outspoken against Israel, even in the mildest sense, which Spain hasn't even really been that outspoken, have seen the wrath of the Trump administration and the United States as a whole. So there's a lot of kind of interesting facets to this argument. So let's see. I think that Spain did respond, and I believe she is the vice president.
Voy a decirle al señor Trump que el pretendido castigo que quiere profesar a los españoles le va a salir muy caro a los norteamericanos. Me quiero explicar. Le voy a dar una mala noticia al señor Trump. y es que la balanza comercial de España con Estados Unidos es deficitaria. Hay que recordárselo al señor Trump. Esto quiere decir algo tan sencillo como que si él practica estas políticas, va a perjudicar directamente a los norteamericanos y a las norteamericanas. Es decir, si llevase esa amenaza, esa política del odio adelante, no castigaría a nuestro país. Le rebotaría directamente a los norteamericanos y a las norteamericanas. El castigo le va a salir muy caro al señor Trump. Y dos, por ser clara, si eso pasase, España va a defender sus sectores productivos.
Now, of course, oh, she is the Deputy Prime Minister, Yolanda Díaz. Of course, the MAGA contingent online has said that, well, they're calling her the vice president because they don't know, but they're saying she's threatened Trump. So I guess that vowing to protect your industry is threatening Trump, I guess. We all know that that tariffs aren't supposed to be used as weapons. And he's very blatant about the fact that he's using tariffs as punishment. I think he even used the words, I'm using it as punishment. But I'm wondering, like, a lot of your thoughts on this, because the trade war isn't just, well, this may develop into a trade war. It's not quite that yet. But the trade war is escalating, it appears. It's been escalating throughout the week. We touched on it on Sunday. And Trump is also going on a very large anti-BRICS lying spree.
And now the domination, like BRICS. I told anybody wants to be in BRICS, that's fine, but we're going to put tariffs on your nation. Everybody dropped out. They're all dropping out of BRICS. BRICS was an attack on the dollar. And I said, you want to play that game, I'm going to put tariffs on your all of your product coming into the U.S. They said, like I said, we're dropping out of BRICS. And BRICS is like, they don't even talk about it anymore.
They're dropping out of BRICS. Who? Who dropped? If he's talking about Argentina, I mean, they were never in BRICS to begin with. Argentina, I guess. These clips are actually from a meeting with President of Argentina, Javier Milei, who I will get to in a second. But Javier Milei was recently bailed out and then kind of switched his priorities over. But it's interesting. These are the BRICS is a direct attack on the dollar, and everybody's dropping out. Once I said I'll punish you with tariffs. Again, the utilization of tariffs as a punishment is completely against policy and standard operating procedures. Well, let's see what Trump had to say about Milei.
I don't think you should be doing business much with, you can do some trade, but you certainly shouldn't be doing beyond that. Certainly shouldn't be doing anything having to do with the military with China. And if that's what's happening, I'd be very upset about that. Yeah.
You shouldn't be doing anything militarily in terms of trade with China. Important to note that Trump tanked our soybean, I think the whole entire agricultural sector, but I'm not super up to speed with the entire thing. But we do know that he crashed the soybean market pretty much. China was our largest consumer. Obviously, their consumption of soy products is very high. And after being bailed out by Trump, Milei then switched his soybean contracts over to China, started selling them his soybeans. So really interesting kind of backstabbing going on from his pet project. But even at this meeting, he threatened that if Milei doesn't win the next election, there will be no aid or any help going to Argentina at all. But it's interesting. All of the focus has switched to China, even in Europe. So this is Mark Rutte.
It's highly likely that China will force the junior partner in that relationship, being Russia, under the leadership of Vladimir Putin, to move against NATO here. to keep us busy. For all these reasons, we have to make sure that we work as strongly together with them. And then on the hybrid threats, this is, of course, a big worry, and we are working on it.
China, who is one of your EU's largest trade partners, is going to push Russia to attack the EU. Make it make sense. Why would China, especially Western European or Eastern European countries, why would China want Russia to push into the EU or even into Europe at all? It makes sense. Oh, just in, this is funny. Trump has said that India has promised not to buy oil from Russia. I can't wait to hear Modi's response to this. I really, oh dear, a promise. Oh, a promise and a song. But what else is going on with China? We know from over the weekend that Trump threatened, I think it was 100% tariffs on top of whatever's on China right now, which crashed the crypto market. We talked about the huge, basically, not rug pulls, but a lot of people came in and just made a killing off of this. Hundreds of millions of dollars and wealth was generated for mystery wallets. And the actual market didn't crashed quite a bit as well. And over the weekend, Trump also kind of backed off of that. He said, you know, we don't want to hurt China. We're here to help, you know, but we'll see. Are they here to hurt China or are they here to help?
Shut down when we can't get seven more Democratic senators across the line, but 85 U.S. senators are willing to give President Trump the authority to put up to 500% tariffs on China for the purchase of Russian oil.
We did or in draft, so this is quite real. But our expectation is that they won't implement this and that we'll be able to be back to where we were a week ago, where we had the tariff levels we've agreed to and we have the flow of rare earth magnets we agreed to.
Threatening 500% tariffs is first. I believe Trump also did a Truth Social about this. Yeah, the soybeans. So we're threatening with 500% tariffs on top of what's already there, which I don't know if the 100% went through it. And this is because they won't send magnets. So this is a threat. Again, we're using tariffs as a lever or as a crowbar to get China to kind of act in our best interest and give our military magnets. This is after we're kind of subtly admitted that China has surpassed us militarily. And China has the magnets that our military so desperately needs in order just to function. And so we're going to threaten them with 500% tariffs and then try to say, we're here to help you. Just send us the magnets that we need. It's all pretty hysterical. And well, what? How would you think that China would respond? Victor Gao, one of my favorites. Here he is.
Yeah, and China will lose the U.S. market, which, as I've said, is 15%.
We don't care. China has been here for 5,000 years, most of the time.
Yeah, and China will lose the U.S. market, which, as I've said, is 15%.
We don't care. China has been here for 5,000 years, most of the time. There was no United States, and we survived. Mm-hmm. And if the United States wants to bully China, we will deal with the situation without the United States, and we expect to survive for another 5,000 years.
You have to love that. We don't care. China has been here for 5,000 years, and if the United States wants to bully us, then we'll go another 5,000 without the United States. We talk about this frequently on the show, about civilizational states. And even some of the more nationalistic states that may not be considered civilizational. But, you know, civilizational states include states such as Russia, China, Iran, India, some consider Turkey. A lot of Iraq would be another. I would almost throw in Venezuela. But these civilizational states, they don't have the same outlook. They don't have the same lens. They can't even, the United States can't comprehend what it's like to be in a 5,000-year-old country. It's a 250-year-old country. So for a 5,000-year-old country, especially one like as pragmatic as China, is going to say, you're literally a blip on our radar. You're a grain of sand on the on our beach of history. You've only been here for not even a tenth of the time we've been here. Just, it's crazy. It just to think that you can bully these states around and they will kowtow. You know, we're talking about a country in China that went through a 100th century of humiliation. Not that they would go through it again or that they want to, but that they understand sacrifice for the nation sucks. I don't want to like make it sound like it was pretty, but Americans don't understand that. Chinese understand fighting, having war inside of your borders and fighting for your own country and for your nation. China even knows how to do it with soft power, all of the sort of soft power wars they've been under in their existence. So you're not going to get states like, and that's why I'm curious about this India breaking news about India promising to stop buying oil. They're making a great amount of money off of buying oil from Russia and reselling it, which full support, you should. And they are going to promise to stop selling it just like that. It's just, again, and now let's get to the other thing that felt like a facade or a show. This thing, this production that went on in Israel. So first things first, let's start, I guess we'll start with the funnier things because it just gets more and more depressing as we go on. Well, actually, let's start with the worst thing. I think this might be the most depressing part of the whole thing. Let's see. I'm going to give you all 2 minutes, so brace yourselves.
There was a lot of pressure put on these presidents. It was put on me too, but I didn't yield to the pressure. But every president for decades said, we're going to do it. The difference is I kept my promise and officially recognized the capital of Israel and moved the American embassy to Jerusalem. Isn't that right, Miriam? Look at Miriam. She's back there. Stand up, Miriam. Stand up. Miriam and Sheldon would come into the office. They'd call me. He'd call me. I think they had more trips to the White House than anybody else I could think of. Look at her sitting there so innocently. She's got $60 billion in the bank. $60 billion. I think she's saying no more. And she loves Israel, but she loves it. And they would come in. And her husband was a very aggressive man, but I loved him. He was a very aggressive, very supportive of me. And he'd call up, can I come over and see you? I say, Sheldon, I'm the president of the United States. It doesn't work that way. He'd come in. But they were very responsible for so much, including getting me thinking about Golan Heights, which is probably one of the greatest things to ever happen. Miriam, stand up, please. She really is. I mean, she loves this country. She loves this country. Her and her husband are so incredible. We miss him so dearly. But I actually asked her, I'm going to get her in trouble with this, but I actually asked her once. I said, so Miriam, I know you love Israel. What do you love more, the United States or Israel? She refused to answer. That might mean Israel, I must say. We love you. Thank you, darling, for being here. That's a great honor. Great honor. She's a wonderful woman.
How insightful was all of that? Why? Okay, so the Adelsons, however you like to say it, they pretty much run the states of Texas and Nevada. Sheldon is obviously dead. He passed away. Miriam inherited all of the wealth. $60 billion in the bank she has, right? She said, no more. Why do these people have unfettered, free-range access to the president of the United States of America? Now, somebody said in the comments, of course she does. She was an IDF soldier. Yes, she's Israeli. So now we have a widow of a billionaire. Now, the billionaire, Adelson, was American. He's American born. But all of his wealth and power has now been inherited and bestowed upon his Israeli IDF veteran wife, who, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but are we sure this person is even a real human? Like, this person has all of that's this much power. She's probably the most powerful woman in America and maybe in a lot of the world. Like, and this is the person. So we have this man who was at least American, has now bestowed all of his wealth and power onto his Israeli IDF veteran wife. What also interesting is Trump's attitude towards Sheldon before 10 years ago. Sheldon Adelson's looking to give big dollars to Rubio because he feels he can mold him into his perfect little puppet. I agree. Why did Sheldon give you big dollars to run for president? Was it because he felt he could mold you into his perfect little puppet? I mean, you took what, $100 million or was it $200 million? Something along those lines in that range. I mean, to these people, it's really nothing at all, just pocket change. They make it in a weekend after Trump rugs the market. But mold him into his perfect little puppet. Okay, well, you'll take that money now, right? And then he talks about, you know, I moved the capital to Jerusalem. They told me to. I started thinking about the Golan Heights. They told me to. You know that Trump had no idea what the hell the Golan Heights were. This is just, it's maniacal. It really is. I do have a clip of Sheldon prior, obviously, before he died.
Somebody said that the Adelson family has nothing to gain except that which is in our heart. I am not Israeli. The uniform that I wore in the military, unfortunately, was not an Israeli uniform. It was an American uniform, although my wife was in the IDF, and one of my daughters was in the IDF, and my two little boys, our two little boys, one of whom will be bar mitzvah tomorrow. Hopefully he'll come back. Thank you. Hopefully he'll come back. His hobby is shooting, and he'll come back and be a sniper for the IDF. All we care about is being good Zionists, being good citizens of Israel, because even though I'm not Israeli born, Israel is in my heart.
So, I mean, a lot to unpack there, right? Unfortunately, I wore the American uniform. Fortunately, I didn't get to fight for the IDF. But thankfully, my wife did. And all of my kids that get to leech off of the goodness of America, they go serve in the IDF. They don't serve America. And hopefully, my son will get to come back and be a sniper in the IDF. This is someone who not only is American born and grew up in America, but by his own admission, served in the United States Armed Forces. I mean, people call me a traitor because I'm hard on America or because I espouse some political views that might not be upholding of American exceptionalism and imperialism. And this man is sitting here telling us, me being one of the richest men in America, but where I made the majority of my money, the only thing that we are concerned about is being good Zionists and being good Israeli citizens. So if the American-born United States military veteran is that fervently Zionist, imagine what his wife is like. The IDF Israeli-born cat lady looking IDF veteran. Oh my God, she's here as I'm ranting about the Adelsons. It's a perfect time for her to come on stage. Please welcome Mace with her I Love New York. She's got her espresso. I've got mine. We are
cheers to that. Okay. You should have seen me running around in these heels like, oh my God. One of them days.
I just finished playing the clip of Trump thanking Miriam Adelson while he was speaking in Israel. Yeah, and thanking her and saying, you know, what's her favorite country? Is it Israel or is it the United States?
He didn't answer, you know? No, but what's worse is that he legit just told the world that, you know, she's one of the biggest donors and basically, and he did the Golan Heights for her. He ended up moving Jerusalem. I mean, the embassy to Jerusalem. That's like admitting to doing things for a foreign country for money. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't get how he gets away with so much. I really don't.
I'm not really understanding it either. Maybe you can give some more insights as we actually just got started on the Trump part. So okay. You're not that late. You actually got to skip all the boring trade war stuff. I don't know if you're even into that. But oh, you're
100% on China?
500%.
Oh, I did a whole analysis on that. It's so like, I mean, I don't know. I did kind of like a worst case scenario. The best case scenario was terrible. I mean, like the best case scenario is terrible. Like there's really no good that's coming from it because it's not like what tariffs would normally do. It's not going to be protecting that. It's not like the sectors are not going to be protected. Like it's legit just bonkers. He had an ego attack, I guess. And now we have to pay for it. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, was there an update? Did they really go through with the.
They have said that they want China to reevaluate and continue to send the magnets. And they're hoping that that's where they will wind up. They said, basically, we know that these tariffs won't go through because the tariffs were contingent upon Europe doing them as well. He said, we know these tariffs won't go through. What we're hoping to is that we'll be back to square one and we'll be receiving the magnets again. So basically, it's just an empty threat.
You know what's funny, though? Then he got mad about soybeans. Like, they're supposed to still, like...
There it is.
Oh, my God. You can't make this up. You can't.
They're not buying it on purpose. It's an economically hostile act. We are considering terminating business with China having to do with cooking oil. China's going to be devastated. But since you're here, it's perfect that you're here since you are Persian. We're about to talk about Cyrus the Great.
Oh, my.
I saw these billboards and I was like, oh, geez, what are we going to do with this?
But I'm loving it. Like he's loving it. He's tearing.
Yes.
It. Like, yeah, I don't know.
And then we have this clip from the Knesset.
President. You stand before the people of Israel not as another American president, but as a giant of Jewish history, one for whom we must look back 2.5 millennia into the mists of time to find a parallel, Cyrus the Great. You, President Donald J. Trump, are a colossus who will be enshrined in the pantheon of history. Thousands of years from now, Mr. President, the Jewish people will remember you. We are a nation that remembers. Far from being a local struggle, what we are witnessing is a global struggle, a global battle between the forces of extremism, radicalism, and fundamentalism, and those of freedom, liberty, and democracy. What the world needs now is not appeasers who feed the crocodile in the hope that they will be eaten last, like the kind we have seen recently at the UN General Assembly. And by the way, President Trump, your team has checked the teleprompter. It is working beautifully. What the world needs What the world needs now are more leaders who are brave, resolute, strong, and bold. The world needs more Trumps.
Can you guys stop doing this in other countries? Stop blowing his head up, because then he comes home and we got to deal with the aftermath of what of the.
It's like everybody loves him except his own country. Like everybody here is pissed off, right? But he's going around and he's just absorbing that. You know, like the Oh my God. I just thought about it whenever the Time magazine. Was it Time magazine?
We're gonna get to that.
Okay.
Hold the whole drawers, girl. We build a whole, we gotta build up a little bit. But I just love this clip because first of all, if you guys know, Cyrus the Great is like big hero to the Jews. He's in the book of Isaiah. I think he's hailed as some sort of Messiah almost, because he allowed the Jews to return to it from exile, and they built the temple. So there's only one temple left to build. They call him Third Temple Trump for a reason. I mean, we'll see. I guess we'll see what happens. We've also got some other announcements about them going back into Gaza, but we'll get to that as well. So, and we know how fervent and kind of zealous Israelis can be. So we put this idea of that Trump's the great, Cyrus the Great, in their heads. That's probably a recipe for disaster. Let's get to the other sacrificial lamb, Trump's daughter.
Let me also give a very special thanks to someone who truly loves Israel. In fact, loves it so much that my daughter converted. My daughter converted. I didn't know this was going to happen. Ivanka's here. And Bibi, you do know this was not in the cards for me. You understand that. And she is so happy, and they are so happy. At least I think they're happy. If they're not, we have a big story, right? No, they have a great marriage, and they get along great. They're best friends. They have a very special relationship. But Jared has been so helpful. He really did something very special. He established the Abraham Accords with a group of very wonderful people. I like calling it the Avraham Accords, because people that... Avraham. It's so cool. It's so much sort of nicer, you know, the Abraham versus the Avraham. I just don't want to sound too sanctimonious when I do it. So, you know, I sort of split it up. Just want to keep everybody happy.
I should have cut all that last crap out, because the important part was the Ivanka Jared union. I thought that was interesting because, you know, we talk about, and I'm stealing a quote from Aaron. He's like, we talk about our country being a Christian country, and here's our president saying how happy he is that his daughter turned away from Christ and
he announced. Because you know that's a part like you, well, mm-hmm. I'll just say.
Yeah.
That, yeah, you have to like denounce and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, to each his own. But I mean, it's just literally gone against everything that he stood for prior to. And you know what? Like, there's just, if there's any inkling of doubt for people that still wonder, oh, he's going to rug pull last minute. That was the clip that they need to listen to. Like, there's no way. I mean, he's at home. Like they're all family, you know? I mean, it's almost like he has paid. And I mean, there was a few times where he said, the Jewish people love me, you know? And he like was kind of using that as a comparison to the people that are just never happy with what he's doing here. Yeah.
Do you think that he converted as well?
That's what they say. I just don't see why he would hide it.
I mean, yeah.
I guess maybe I do. Maybe I do.
Well, interestingly enough, and I'm glad Nick's in the audience. I should have just invited him to come on the show as well. But Nick always talks about, he says, these elites don't act like us. They don't love like us. They don't marry like us. And they marry for power. And I thought this post was very interesting from the Persian Jewess, we know, who always posts the most rational things. There will be entire history courses dedicated to studying the global impact of the Trump-Kushner union has had on the Middle East. Disney movie.
I know. I mean, you know, and I like I yeah, well, I guess we'll get to the Gaza thing. You know, I think that there's just been so much that had to have been planned ahead of time. Like if people don't understand how elaborate the tokenization plan is, this is like a long time coming. This is a huge pilot. Like they presented this in such detail. Like there's no way they just mustered that up, right? Like this was in the works. I mean, but we'll get there. We'll get there. But I think that that's true. They do marry for money. And I don't know. I just, I feel like Jared was like a Mossad op and he just like moved in. He's like, yeah, we know she's going to be the president's daughter. I don't know.
They even really love each other like that. I feel like it's very arranged. The Kushners are an incredibly powerful family. They're more powerful than the Netanyahus even. You know, like they're, I think that it was just arranged from the start and she's probably in love with the trainer or something like very typical and cliche.
The pool boy. So Netanyahu stayed, or I guess every time he visited, he used to stay with the Kushners. I didn't, you know, that was a weird thing.
He used to sleep in Jared Kushner's bed. Well, not with Jared Kushner, guys. Yeah. That's what you mean. But he used to, Jared Kushner would get the boot and Netanyahu would get his bedroom. They're all, and I think we were talking about this the other night in a space. I don't know if it was one with us. It's all a blur. But we were talking. I was like, it's like I don't know where our elites end and theirs begin. It's just a big conglomeration of American and Israeli elites, and they just kind of siphon off the American people collectively. Because Israelis live a decent life. They have free healthcare, free university, et cetera, et cetera. Sure, they have to serve in the IDF, but. You know, and they're kind of all just siphoning off the American people collectively. I think it's just an elites thing.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what Netanyahu's in trouble for? Like, just, you know.
Oh, girl, but he has bronchitis, so he can't go to court tomorrow. It's canceled again.
I'm going to hell. When I heard the news, I was just like, oh, God, don't do it, Maze. Don't say it.
At least they didn't start a war. I mean. Could have been worse. I'd rather him pretend to have a cough than start another, yet another war.
But you know what, though, Sarah? Like, if there's a president that's going to do it, it's Trump. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they might give us, like, a little bit of a break between, like, the treasonous, like, just, I mean, on blast. But I think that Iran... If it's going to happen, it's going to have to happen under Trump. I don't see, you know, well, J.D. Vance would probably, if J.D. Vance gets in, if that's the next plan, then potentially, which I hope to God it's not, you know. Do you know how rich this mother effer got since he's been in office? Like, I don't even think you guys understand. He and his whole family, they literally have, like, if let's just say the wealth of the world was already, you know, like, I don't know, like 70%, let's just say, of it in the 1%, it's at like 95 now, right? Like, I mean, it was billions and billions of dollars. But his son, what did Barron Trump, like 80? Was it billion?
Million, I think. It's million.
Like they
thankfully.
Just-
thankfully, it's just million. I mean, we've watched humongous transfers of wealth. There was an enormous one during COVID, and this seems like it's the final nail in our coffin. Like, they have amassed tremendous amounts of wealth through these wars, the genocide, and now through these weird market manipulations that they do, like, once a quarter. It's just insane.
Yeah. I have a feeling that they're going to crash the economy into the carbon market. I mean, that's just, you know, on my bingo card, but we'll see.
Interesting. How do you think that'll be after the new year and the holidays?
I mean, there's no way. There's like right now at this point, I think everyone should know that there's no way to save it. Like, I mean, what are they going to do? Like, there's just, it's impossible. Even when he was talking about, you know, the Bitcoin reserves and all of that, what he did is privatized it. He just pretty much flipped it on his head. And he's like, you know what, we're going to pick and choose who's going to be able to like issue these stable coins. And then, you know, it's going to have one for one. So they have like some sort of regulatory checks that they go through. But on top of that, it's pedal to the metal. Like what I see is basically. The only thing that they can do is to crash it into the carbon market, because if you think about it, that's what's going to be able to sustain the amount of energy that AI needs, right? So they're going to be offsetting it with these carbon pipelines, the carbon capture pipelines. This was all in the Big Beautiful Bill. I was screaming it from the mountaintops. Like, they're about to put 95,000 miles of carbon capture pipelines and put all this carbon underground. And then they get to just say, okay, boom, for a ton, here's, you know, a credit. And the credit's worth like $185. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is like in 2030, when the international level says, okay, we're going to have to reduce the amount of carbon again. So what does that do? It raises this, you know, the demand for more of these. And so they're going to, you know, essentially that's what's going to be, I think, driving. I mean, and I would love to know what other people think. I mean, this is just me totally speculating, but yeah, I would love to know what other people think.
We'll get to more about our big business in a second, but first we'll talk about Gaza. It seems the kind of, I think that you were in the same boat as me. I was really trying to be as optimistic as possible, but it just felt like slapping a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound and kind of just saying like, I'm coming here for my medals and my ceremony, and then I'm going home, and then we'll figure everything else out later. But this is from while Trump was still in Israel. I thought this was very telling.
And it's going to be that, and they are going to be great partners. And I hope everybody's going to join the Abraham Accord. I like to say the Avraham. I love Avraham, but somehow it doesn't sound as good when I say it as it does when some of my other friends say it who are from the region. But we're going to get a lot of people joining the Abraham Accords. So we have the four great nations that did it early on, and they stayed with it. And then you had the Biden administration, which is the worst administration in the history of our country. And obviously, they did nothing on that and anything else. And so it stayed at four. And now a lot of people, even today, they're talking about all joining up. So many people have talked to me about that. And it's going to be a great tribute to really the United States. I mean, the United States has worked very hard in the Middle East. So it would be a tribute to us and to Jared and to Steve and to all of the people, Marco, all of the people that have worked so hard on that. And it really is going to bring, it's going to guarantee that it all stays together. You're going to do well, because the four nations do very well. I mean, they do extremely, as they're wealthy, but they're a lot wealthier because of it. So I hope everybody's now joining up. Now we have no excuses. We don't have a Gaza, and we don't have an Iran as an excuse. That was a good excuse, but we don't have that anymore. All the momentum now is toward a great, glorious, and lasting peace. And our commitment to fulfilling the 20-point plan we developed together will be the crucial foundation for achieving that bright future. And it's being worked on right now as we speak.
We don't have a Gaza.
Yeah, I heard that. You know, what was phase two when he was like, we're going to phase two now?
I thought phase two was the dead bodies and disarmament.
But he was saying that they didn't get, where are they? But they're supposed to go like get the dead bodies out of the rubble.
They got four. And then they argued and said one of them was not either one of theirs or one of the ones they expected or something. And then Hamas said, we've complied. And then this is what Trump said today, I believe.
We have told them we want disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't, we have told them we want disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm. Do you understand me?
Yes, you say
because
quickly.
You always, everyone says, oh, well, they won't disarm. They will disarm. And I spoke to Hamas, and I said, you're going to disarm, right? Yes, sir, we're going to disarm. That's what they told me. They will disarm or we will disarm them. Got it? Okay.
What is the deadline you're going to put on that? You say quickly, sir. Sir, you said quickly, but what is the deadline you're going to put on that before you take action?
A reasonable period of time. Pretty quickly.
Mr. President.
Reasonable period of time. Come on.
So, like, if you could do it so quickly, then why did it take 2 years? You know,
this also came out today.
Wow. I mean, it's crazy. You know, when I read that deal, I knew this was going to be the thing that they, I knew that this was going to be the trick, the trap, the probably impossible to do, especially within a given certain amount of time. And I knew that once they got all their hostages back, they were going to pull this shit on the ones that were deceased, which is like, I mean, it's crazy. And then, so what are they going to do? No Gaza. Like, what are they going to do with the people that are there? I mean, what is the, like, you know what? We should have gone through the 20-point plan in detail. I know we tried to, but.
We did. But I mean, honestly, they were, the things were so broad in there. It was like, what does this even mean? It was like, what does this, like, it was very strange. We're just going to disarm them. Okay. What does that mean? What does that even entail? Just came out recently while I was streaming, I think, Defense Minister Israel Katz has ordered the IDF to prepare a plan to decisively defeat Hamas in Gaza if fighting resumes. The order responds to the Trump proposal, which requires Hamas to return all deceased hostages and disarm. Under the plan, Israel, with a U.S.-led international force, would destroy the tunnels and terror infrastructure to demilitarize Gaza. If Hamas refuses, Israel, coordinated with the U.S., will return to fighting to achieve full defeat in the war's objectives.
Okay, so, the war's objectives are what?
Well, it was just to defeat Hamas?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think that they're just, like, it's impossible that they would be able to stay there right now. Where are they going to stay? So there has to be some sort of temporary plan in order for them to do this rebuilding. And then they have IMEC, obviously, which is kind of going through that area, that, like, I think northern Gaza. And they are, you know, from, this is again my speculation, but they want to get started on that as soon as possible, because China is killing it. Like, they are already in about 80 plus countries, gaining massive amounts of geopolitical influence. And they, you know, are about to have a monopoly in trade, like with the Belt and Road Initiative. So I think, and also with the whole AI thing, this is also a part of it. Like, they have the digital corridors with IMEC. So I think that there's like two, I think, bigger, let's just say, financial economic goals. And then, you know, they just don't have a plan for the people. And I think the people, they shouldn't have to go. You know, I don't know, whatever, I support whatever they want to do. Who am I to say anything? Like, you know, whatever makes them happy, you know, God willing, you know, they get what they want. But.
Well, I think I should have uploaded the video. It was Jared in 2022. I think he said, we need to move the people out and then do what we want with the land. And then we can move the people back in as we, like, see fit.
But even said in the plan, that the one that we read,
that they can stay.
That they didn't expect. So out of all the people that they left, that they only expected like 25% to come back. Yeah.
I'm like we said, I think the whole ceremony was just pomp and circumstance to make Trump feel better, line everything up so he could get his Nobel Peace Prize next year. And don't worry, he got a time cover, his triumph. The leader Israel needed. What about What about the leader we need? The leader Israel needed. Oh, okay. I forgot. Yeah. We elected. Oh, I didn't elect him. I didn't vote, but I forgot we elected the president of Israel.
Right. I mean, that's what it's on the cake. The pomposity, though. The pomposity of, like, Israel, like they're more important than anything. This is the leader that Israel needed. It's just. That's why I posted. I was like, how does this make you guys feel?
The leader Israel needs right now in their greatest time of need. Thank you, America, for electing the leader Israel needed.
I swear, it's crazy.
But who wrote the article, Maze?
No
way. It was written by Ehud Barak.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that. That's crazy.
Literally never ends. Never ends.
No,
now we'll get into the man behind the curtain. So before Trump, or I think he was on his way to his flight to go to Egypt/Israel, he's had this to say.
Well, who's going to be the head anchor at CBS? Not Nora O'Donnell. I don't believe it. You know, there's a story that they're going to, I don't believe.
I'll tell you what,
Larry Ellison is great, and his son David is great. They're friends of mine, they're big supporters of mine. and they'll do the right thing. They're going to make CBS, hopefully they'll, you know, they called it the Tiffany Network, and it's got great potential. CBS has great potential. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thanks, thank you, sir.
Why stop there? They want to buy HBO, Warner Brothers, and CNN too.
They're buying up everything. I mean, I feel like that there should be laws in place. Or don't we have antitrust laws? Like, something should be stopping this, right? Like, I just don't understand. TikTok, they got Electronic Arts. Now they got all of these. I mean, it's insane.
Paramount, yep. Now they want HBO. Like,
yeah, that's not. I mean, I don't know. I guess I can just laugh instead of cry. Because, like, at this point, you know, like, if once the reality of this sets in, now, like, do you have the clip of what he was saying that people are going to do once? It wasn't either one that was saying that everybody's going to act right when they know that they're being surveilled.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean,
everyone will behave because everyone will know that they're being watched.
Yeah.
Police, the citizens, everybody.
And do you see why I get so pissed off? Like, whenever we're in spaces and just people make this, like, left or right thing. And it's like, do you guys not get it? Like, we are completely, all of us, every last one of left, right, all right now are about to be just in a very, like, turbulent times. But also, I don't think we'll ever be able to moonwalk out of this. Like, traditionally, like, there's tug of war, you know, this administration comes in, does this, then this one undoes it, then this one does this, and whatever. What's happening in the Trump administration, I hope you guys know, it's not going anywhere. Like, Palantir, right? The extent to which these contracts are, this is the second $800 million contract, by the way. But, like, what I've been working on as of late, we haven't even really got into this yet, and maybe we can have a show on it, but like the end game is much deeper and crazier than I can even imagine. And we'll get into that. It's beyond the whole surveillance state. And I think that the people that he has around him is very telling, right? And so in essence, it's like beyond, okay, so we've all heard of the Internet of Things. We've heard of the Internet of Bodies. Well, there's an Internet of Souls. And I know that that's like, whoa, like, you know, is that possible? Well, no, I don't think they have jurisdiction over my soul. However, I do think that they have the technology and they have the ability with AI to be able to interfere topologically in some way. And they're able, they have a protocol layer that is able to nudge and you know, affect people and their behavior, their decisions, even their thoughts. Like, it's all written. It's all published. Like, it's not even me speculating. This is what they're saying that they're doing. And it's very scientific. It's very techy. And it's just the bio hybrid computing. Yeah.
Networking. Yeah. Maze talks about all this stuff that's like way above my pay grade, like these like human computer hybrids, and I'm like, I don't even want to know what's going on. I can't even stomach it.
I don't blame you. It's crazy. It's definitely, you know, and just the thing is that, like, so he comes into office, he's essentially made his entire, and I know people, whoever Trump, they're probably hating me right now, but like, truth is that he has done everything that any truth seeker that is real, you have no choice but to have, like, completely let, like, that's it. I mean, Bill Gates, Palantir, him and his whole family are rich, servitude to Israel, completely effed up the trade wars. Our economy is about to tank. He's going to crash the dollar on purpose. He's created the biggest, like, AI, you know, infrastructure here. Carbon pipelines, bro. Carbon pipelines. But I thought we were pulling out of the Paris Accord. Like, I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
No, you're good. I want you to rant. Go. The viewers love it. They're like, Maze knows her stuff. But yeah, they're like, whoa. And now I lost my own train of thought because I'm like rooting you on. Yeah, I totally lost it.
You were talking about the carbon pipelines and then.
What did you think? Did you get to read Peter Thiel? I talked about it on our last episode. I did I talked about the leaked quotes from Peter Thiel's Antichrist seminar. And he said that the Antichrist is not he said, in the past, the Antichrist would be a Dr. Strangelove type, right? Like someone who's like industrializing and wants to like bring forth new technology. But now in these days, the Antichrist is someone who wants to stem the tide of AI and technology. So he named Greta. He said someone like Greta would be the Antichrist. So anybody who questions sort of his conquest is the Antichrist. Anybody kind of being kind of uneasy about this AI takeover is an Antichrist figure.
Yeah, he kind of spun it as if like those that are, you know, scared of it, like they're the ones that are going to like bring it into fruition type of thing, which is like ridiculous to me because, you know, ultimately that was a very strategic move. Now, with all of this spiritual war that's going on, like, why would you just decide to have this of all people? Right. I mean, it was very strategic. And I think that, you know, there was I don't know. I just don't find that. I don't think that he just sits around writing like lectures, you know, like I'm going to do a 4-day lecture on, you know, like my bibliography. What do they call it? Autobiography, right? Like he legit just decided he wanted to talk about it on a show and then have a 4-day seminar on it, which what could you talk about for 4 days? Like that's a lot, right? But in essence, though, if you think about it, if there is this idea that it's going to be sentient and it is, you know, like it's just there's something to that. It's kind of poking at people's fears. And I feel like that was an intentional move, you know. But yeah, I don't know. Palantir in itself is like, it is the beast. Okay. If you want to talk about like Mark of the Beast and whatnot, like I'm not into all the, like, whatever the spiritual, you know, I will just say that I find it interesting that it is truly the beast. It's going to be what pulls everyone's data together. There's going to be an AI integration layer. Your digital IDs is going to tie everything to you. And without it, you won't be able to do anything. Like, I think eventually that's going to be the end game, right? Do you know that in Brazil, the kids, and I watched this with my son, he was watching, he likes to watch this one, this guy that cooks or whatever. And they, like, this one episode, they were going all over the place to try the school lunches. So they go to Brazil, like, the kids have to have their IDs scanned and when they get their meal, right? And then of course, after I saw that, I started went and looked this up. They have, like, piloted all of the social impact stuff that I wrote an article on this right around the time with the Big Beautiful Bill. Social impact is like where you kind of remove the like public assistance and now it's kind of creating an investment opportunity where, you know, things like housing and food and whatever would now be an investment for an improvement path. And so this is something that I see taking shape here. And I've looked, Mays called it. Okay. Mays called it in July because they're pulling out the public assistance. They're creating like these social impact bonds have been around forever. Human capital bonds. Have you heard of that?
No.
Oh girl, we got to do a space on this. And so they've been around, but in America, they just didn't really have the demand. Right. So now kind of pulling it away, thinking about all the people who are going to have to struggle. Of course, they're going to start the washing machine that is super loud. I hope you guys can hear that. Can you guys hear that?
A little bit. It's not a big deal.
So anyway, they like are creating just basically the demand for these things to come up because, you know, with automation, they're going to need a way to make poverty profitable.
What do we say to the people? I see this a lot and it's been happening to me a lot. And people come to me and they say, they've been watching us this whole time. Why does it matter now? What do you care? They know everything already. Like, why does this even matter? Why are you even alarmed about something like Palantir or Oracle?
Hold on. I'm going to tell my brother to turn that off.
I can't hear it anymore, so you're probably fine.
Yeah, it's probably filling up with water. Like, anyway, whatever. And the crazy thing is that like, it's right there. And then they, my son and his friend like broke the door off. So I can't even like shut the door to like, to make it quiet. So it's just all, yeah. So, but what, Jesus Christ, hold on. I'm sorry. Give me a second. I should probably mute the mic.
Well, what I was going to ask is what we say to people who, because it happens to me constantly. They say it all the time. Why? What are you worried about Oracle and Palantir having your data? Like all of your data is all, they already have all of it. And I don't know. Maybe there's something to that. Okay, good. She's back. But we'll see.
So first of all, it's not a matter of having the data. Right now, the data exists in its own little silos. So within this agency top down, when you're creating a layer that is bringing all this data together, it then goes from analytical to predictive, right? And eventually at some point, going back to what I was saying about the biohybrid computing system, is that it'll become prescriptive. This is the huge leap because, like, let's just say they know all of my information as it pertains to, oh, by the way, they're creating a huge mega API for IRS. Like, remember we were supposed to get rid of IRS, but no.
Yeah. No, they got rid of half the workers.
Yeah, because they made it much more efficient and effective now that they have created a mega API so that they're all connected. But so, like, let's just say, you know, whatever information about me is in one place. Now, if you take that information and then you find out, like, I mean, you know, my, like, when you got banking and you have like healthcare, you have all of your tax information, anything that you, any type of government, I guess, records that you have. This is a massive difference. It's like pulling it together, and it's because it's so much data that it's able to draw so many patterns and say that it's high probability that Sarah would be doing this. And do you know that the whole reason that they were bringing Palantir on board, this is a while back, matter of fact, Whitney Webb recorded a report on this, was for them to be able to prevent shootings, school shootings. So, you know, there is this ability. They've already implemented this in Chicago. I think there's a few cities that they've already kind of done the pilot of the predictive policing. But this is a, you know, surveillance state against the people. And, you know, when he's saying that they want to compete with China, he's not lying, but he's not competing with China on AI. He's competing with China on surveillance state. Like the amount of data that China has is massive. I mean, they have, you know, because of their population, and then they've been doing that for this for a long time. So this does put them ahead, but the way that he was spinning it is like, we have to do this as because of national security risk, like they're going to be ahead of us. But it's like, bro, you're supposed to be cleaning out some swamp somewhere, right? Like, aren't you really draining that? Like, what are you doing? Like, you just decide that you're just going to put the surveillance state on us instead of like turning it on the government, making sure that we have every penny accounted for.
I was under the impression that was going to happen. I was always told to be terrified of what was going on in China and to avoid it at all costs.
Okay. So for your listeners, guys, when you aggregate data, the danger of it is exponential. It's so much more different than when they sit in their own silos. Like right now it is giving, they're beginning to kind of link everything and everyone that's even linked. Like right now, just knowing that let's just say they pull in data from Metaverse and then they pull in data from X, whatever, knowing who my connections are here and who my connections are there, like all of this information means something. Like they're able to extract so much information from it that it's ridiculous. Like, I just think that people should look into that. Just put it in ChatGPT if you want to. Like, just ask, like, what's the difference between siloed data and aggregated data? And it'll break it down for you.
Well, there you go. Maze, thank you. The people love you, Maze. On Twitter, off Twitter, on YouTube, in the live chats. We're going to have to bring Maze on more often. Or if I could twist their arms, we'll get the girls to all do a podcast together eventually. We'll see.
It'll be so much fun.
It will be so much fun. I'm so glad you came on today. Maze, where should people find you, and what do you want them to – your parting words, I guess.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope that all of you who are observing what's going on in the world are not shy about speaking your mind. I think as more and more people are very vocal about it and are, not bullied into, being quiet, like just speak your mind. I really do think that at some point there's just going to the wall of Jericho is coming down. Like, I just feel like there's going to be something. So, just continue. And thanks for having me. This was so much fun.
We're going to do it again. When the schedules aren't crazy, and when you're not running around. Yeah, we'll have a good organized.
Yeah, girl. Anyway. Like, I got my heels on. I was sitting there like, oh my God, I'm running.
You're totally fine. We've dealt with disasters. We always, it's nothing. You're totally fine. I'm so glad you came. Now I know I can make you come again and again. So there we go. You'll be on over and over again. Well, thank you guys. We will see you on Sunday. Hopefully Chris will be back. And if not, then I'll twist Maze's arm to come back again. And if not, find us in the spaces. Thank you guys. And you guys have a good day. Don't forget, buy Dan Kovalik's new book, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Buy it, read it, live it, love it. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye, guys.